Welcome to episode 58 of the Accessibility Craft Podcast, where we explore the art of creating accessible websites while trying out interesting craft beverages. This podcast is brought to you by the team at Equalize Digital, a WordPress accessibility company and the proud creators of the Accessibility Checker plugin. In this episode, Amber and Steve discuss the introduction of JavaScript scanning and Accessibility Checker, the reasons behind this change, and how we expect it to evolve over time. For show notes and a full transcript, go to accessibilitycraft.com/058. And now, on to the show.
Hey, everybody. It's Amber, and I'm here today with Steve.
Hello, everyone.
And we don't have Chris.
No Chris.
I don't know what to do.
We're all sad.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little plugin, Accessibility Checker, WordPress plugin, building in public kind of conversation. And Chris said he probably didn't have to be here for that.
No. Cool.
Although I am going to miss him on introducing our beverage because he usually does a really good job. I don't know. Do you want to try?
I'll give it a try, but it's not going to be as good as what Chris would do. So today we are doing the Mango Michelada. It is a delicious
Michelada.
Michelada, did I say it wrong? Michelada.
Yeah.
It's by Estrella. Okay, I'm going to mess
Jalisco.
This up.
Jalisco.
We just
Spanish.
We just prepped this and I'm already messing it up. And it's a golden beer, as it says in Spanish on the can.
Cerveza Dorada.
Yeah, made with Clamato, mango Michelada. So in the notes we have, it is a delicious twist on a classic Mexican staple inspired by Estrella. Say it again, Amber.
Jalisco
culture and the Mexican mango cart vendors in L.A. Golden Road Brewing created a mango flavored beer blended with Clamato Pecca.
So, yeah, I think it's Clamato Picante.
Jeez, you are so much better at this. Why am I doing this?
I live in Texas. LA.
Yeah, you're from Texas. Okay. Yeah, this is.
There's not a lot of Spanish in Ohio. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah. For a Midwestern guy like me, it's difficult.
So but, yeah, Chris got this because we had ended our last conversation when we were talking about Accessibility Checker. We chatted a little bit on that podcast episode about Micheladas, and when I hadn't had any. And then when we went to Mexico for Cabo Press, I had a bunch and they were really good, but they were like fresh made. Like a Michelada is like a basically like a Bloody Mary with beer instead of liquor. So they take tomato juice and then they mix in some beer. And then usually they put, it's like a lime spicy salt, like on the rim. And it's called tajin, if you're familiar with that. And I really enjoyed them in Mexico. Although it was interesting because I learned that, so my sister-in-law is from central Mexico and they call them micheladas there. And so I asked for a michelada when we went to Cabo Press, which is over in like the Baja Peninsula where we were. And they were like, oh, that's just central Mexico. So apparently out there, they're in Ojo Rojo.
Ojo Rojo.
Yeah. So Chris was like, he got one, but then he got one with mango in it. And I'm afraid it's going to be gross. I don't know. And also this can, it's a 25-ounce can.
It's huge.
It's like
25 fluid.
Three cans.
Yeah.
In one.
This is how you don't get any work done on a Friday evening.
Well, it is Friday. So I don't know what the weather is like for you, but it's like 80 degrees
80
here and it's sunny. And yesterday I was working with the slider and the windows open and it was so nice.
Yeah.
So like, it seems appropriate to have a beer. Hopefully it will taste good. Otherwise I'll take two sips and then I won't drink anymore.
Yeah. 50 degrees up here in the north. It's not as pleasant as Texas.
It's not nice Friday. Late spring, early summer weather for you.
All right.
Here we go. I also have my Accessibility Craft pint glass that I got for myself off our shop. So I'm going to crack this open and pour it in and see what color it is.
So this is going to taste like a V8, right?
It's going to taste like what?
V8, you know, V8 juice, tomato
yeah,
juice.
but that's what's weird. It has mango in it. So it'd be like V8 with mango
And
and
beer.
beer. We're not selling this very well, Steve. We need Chris here. He would be selling this so much better. All right. So
Amber with
color
the poor.
Impressions with the poor. I'm going to say, first of all, when you actually get a Michelada made by a bartender, it is way more tomato-y than this, which maybe makes sense because maybe it's harder to make it shelf stable or something in the can. But yeah,
it's pretty clear.
Yeah, it's more clear than I thought. It's a really nice peach color, and it had a good amount of foam, but not too much. And
here we go.
It smells mango-y.
Smells like mango. Not too beery.
It smells more like mango than tomato. Do you smell tomato?
No.
No. Yeah. All right. All right. I'm gonna try it. Your face.
Mm-mm.
All right. Tell what does it taste like to you?
Oh. it's got like a real like bitter sourness to it, doesn't it? Maybe that's the tomato.
Yeah, I don't get bitter at all.
I think like a warm spice.
So that's probably like the the clamato, I would guess.
Oh yeah, like a chili powder, but, right? Is that what clamato?
Yeah.
Is?
So yeah, normally, yeah. Like when we did it, like you put like spice around the rim. And so I'm guessing maybe they used like, so they probably used like a spiced tomato juice, which I see. I think what I'm having trouble with, I don't think it's bad, but I think like the mango to me wars too much with the tomato. Like, I think I'd rather have a regular Michelada without also putting fruit in it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I will say this is quite different than anything I've tasted.
It doesn't
podcast.
Taste like beer to me, honestly.
No,
does it taste
not
like
at
beer
all.
To you?
Maybe like nah. Beer. Maybe beer with a bunch of chili powder in it.
Is it spicy to you? I don't think it's spicy.
It's not spicy, but like it's definitely like the spice is definitely something I'm not used to with a drink like this, you know?
Yeah, so it says in the, I guess, closest part to the ingredients, this is beer with mango juice, natural flavors, and vegetable juice for color. So I think I'm a little disappointed because I expected it to be more tomato and less like fruit. Or I don't know, maybe I shouldn't, because the can says literally says mango and has pictures of mangoes all over it.
Yeah.
But I was trying to figure out if it's got to be less alcoholic than drinking an actual beer because it's mixed with juice, right?
Yeah.
But I can't actually see, where does it say what the alcohol percentages?
I was looking for that earlier and I didn't see it. Maybe we have to read the
fine
print. Oh, wait.
Yeah, 3.5% alcohol per volume.
Oh,
so
yeah.
This is like half
low.
A beer. Yeah. So if you don't like as much alcohol content, then you might like this.
Yeah.
Like it's more relaxing and less of a buzz, maybe. I don't know. But I think the flavor is interesting enough that I want to keep tasting it. So I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
It does leave a tomato flavor in my mouth. I just don't get it like while I'm drinking it, but the aftertaste is tomato.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It seems like after you drink it, like for me, it's like a little bit odd, like something I'm not expecting. Like you said, like what's going on here? And it's a little spicy on the end of it, on my tongue.
No.
I mean, maybe that's what they're going for. But not much beer flavor at all.
Mm-mm. I don't. Yeah, it does not taste super like beery to me. No hops, none of that like bitterness that I would expect from that. So I don't know. It's interesting. It's like maybe a good summer day by the pool kind of thing. I would be curious if Estrella makes a normal Michelada. And if so, I would probably try it. I don't know if I would get the mango again, but I'm probably going to keep drinking it during this episode.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not 25 fluid ounces. Maybe we could do like a little, you know,
ounce
can.
This
or
this can
something.
is really big. I could probably shout to Chris and be like, hey, do you want to have the rest? Because yeah. I still think even filling the pint glass, like the can still feels mostly full.
Yeah. So very interesting. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to talk because we haven't had a chance. It's been quite a while since we've talked about what's going on with the plugin. And there was a really big release right before Christmas. I actually wrote the blog post about this release in the car on my laptop. And then I was like, can you go check it for me? Like on my way to Iowa to visit my family, where we released a new way of scanning for things. And so I'm sort of wondering, can you talk a little bit about when we first built the plugin, how you were scanning for problems and what's changed?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can try to boil this down to kind of the most simplest terms I can, because this could be a whole episode just on that alone. But so our accessibility checker plugin, the way it was originally designed was when it scans a page, it actually uses an HTML DOM parser, and it'll actually scrape the page for all the HTML elements and collect those. And it'll also scrape the page for all CSS, whether that's, you know, in a style tag or it's, you know, it's included or it's inline. So it'll go through and try to collect all those things together. And then it'll run through all of our rule checks. So we have quite a few rules, 30 or 40 rules that it runs through and checks, and it uses that scraped information to make the evaluations. So that's how we originally did it. And the reason for doing it that way is our plugin is a little different than a lot of, and has a lot of, running our plugin inside of WordPress has a lot of challenges and limitations. So like you see other like you know, like a Site Improver or a Montecito, right? Like these are SaaS services that run isolated of WordPress, right? So it goes out and grabs a URL, scrapes the page, right? Or actually brings the URL over and probably renders it in a virtual DOM and then evaluates all the information. That way everything's kind of done isolated away from the website. So it's little impact to the website, right? Out of the gate, that was not really like what's not really a possibility or doable for us to roll up a virtual browser inside of WordPress, right? And
I mean, is it even possible? So you're talking about something like Puppeteer.
Yeah, yeah.
And like exactly. Setting like, it up, like, and so it would basically
Chrome
say
Puppeteer,
render this page.
Yeah. I don't know that it's possible. I mean, it may be possible with some very clever hackery, right? Like like I think you would have to load like all of Node, and like it would be very complicated. And
we're building a plugin that we don't know what kind of server environment it's going to be on.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's on, you know, a really nice managed host that has a lot of resources. It's not a shared environment. And sometimes it's on a very inexpensive host that might have hundreds or thousands of websites on the same server.
Right. Yeah. Different resources. And that's been a huge challenge all along as well. So that was fine, right? As the plugin progressed over the years, technology's been changing a little bit too, right? We now have CSS variables, and CSS variables present a whole new challenge to the plugin in scraping and evaluating styles.
Because it has to figure out what the variable, like what the hex code is actually for the. That's why.
Right.
Variable.
Yeah. And I think there's always been a challenge of inheritance, like with the way we're doing things, because we're essentially trying to assume what a rendered page looks like. Right. We have a good set of rules that don't require CSS evaluation. And those run really smooth, right? But we do have a set of rules that we have to know what the font size of something is, or right? We need to know what.
So like color contrast.
Yeah.
There are different rules for different size fonts.
Yeah. Yeah. So what we were doing, we were doing our best to assume what the rendered page looked like. And as CSS variables became, popular and more heavily used, and with the block editor coming out, and the block editor utilizing CSS variables itself that it injects on the page, the inheritance from variable to variable can be quite the algorithm to figure out what that style, what that in value of that style really should be. So when evaluating for accessibility, like, the best thing to do is to evaluate the fully rendered page. That means fully rendered as in the DOM's rendered, styles are applied, and the JavaScript is all executed. And then you run your evaluation. So I think what started happening is through our support channels, we start to get, well, we think there's some false positives, right? And so that leads us to start saying, well, what do we do now? Do we build a SaaS that evaluates these things? But that's a big undertaking. And the unique.
Well, beyond that, I think, like, not to interrupt, but I think, we had all these conversations, right, of us being a background of WordPress developers, and do we have the knowledge in house? Would we hire someone? Would we bring someone in? I mean, I've heard of companies where they hire a third party company to build their thing, and then they just have to maintain it. And like, what would that look like on an ongoing basis with the SaaS? But I think the other thing with the SaaS that I kept coming back to
cost
was I wanted to have a meaningful free plugin. And if all of the scanning is happened on a server that we own, now there's a cost to us every time somebody requests results. It might be tiny. It might be fractions of a penny, but that adds up. And as you get, and when I'm thinking, well, if someone's working on a page and they're scanning it 10 times, maybe every time they change something or add a section or a lot, like that could start to add up on a per page. So then we're like, well, would we limit people? And then we're starting to say, oh, you can, which we've seen that. There's another plugin in WordPress directory that does what ours does, but in their free version you can only scan 20 pages or posts. And I'm just like, I am a realist in that I know not everyone is going to be willing to pay for an accessibility tool. I hope someday that's different. But a personal blog or a very small micro business that they're just starting out and they don't even know if they're going to make any money. Right. Or they're like, well, I make $20,000 a year off my website. Right. Like they're probably not going to pay for that. And so I kept thinking we need to still keep it in WordPress and not have this extra cost where they have to pay, because I want at least a base website to be able to use our tool for free and make their stuff accessible.
Yeah. I think to that too, like it's not just, the cost and limiting the scans. It's that the unique thing about the accessibility checker is that it does these things in near real time as you're editing. If we're to send stuff off to an API, we're not going to be able to have as seamless of a real time feedback as possible, because it could, depending on how many, our install count and how many people are hitting the API at a certain time, it could end up being queued for some time. And that's how all the other ones work. I mean, to the best of my knowledge, right?
Yeah. I mean, the ones we have experience with, like Montito, Site Improve, even Hope Tech, which uses the Wave API, it's just scheduled once a week and then it queues through it. So it's, depending on how large the website is, it might start on Tuesday and finish on Thursday, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just like a standard. This is when this starts once a week. There's no real-time feedback. And also, it doesn't have the ability to do non-public. Like, it can do password-protected sites, but it can't do, like, a draft non-published post on, right? Yeah. Like, what we're able to do is draft posts, which is helpful, I think.
Yeah, so those are some of the challenges that we were presented with, right? And then it's like, so what do we do? So we came up with what we internally call JavaScript scanning, which is kind of just a generic term, but for us, we understand what the difference between our HTML scanning and our JavaScript scanning is.
Our HTML scanning, is it? I mean, PHP is what powers that, right?
Yeah, but when I say HTML, I mean it. We're parsing HTML. We're
Mm,
using
gotcha, yeah.
PHP to parse HTML, right? The HTML is what's being evaluated, not the PHP, but the engine behind it is PHP on the HTML side. So probably you might be right. We should call it PHP scan, right?
PHP is getting right, and that used like Action Scheduler, which originally came from the WooCommerce team, I think is maintained by Automattic now,
Yeah.
to sort of queue things and that. And but we realized all these false positives, especially around color contrast. That was the one that we started to hear the most. So you decided to start there. So
Yeah.
tell me about how scanning changed.
Yeah. So we're presented with a very difficult challenge of something that several people have told us is not even possible. And we've told ourselves that it wasn't possible. And we've had a lot of debate back and forth. And we decided that. For color contrast, right? So we bring up color contrast because that's the rule that we're presented with the most false positives, right? Now, I guess if there's false positives, I guess there's a case for a false negative, right? It's not catching everything, right? So we have to render the page. We need a rendered page so that we can properly evaluate it. So what we came up with is what we call JavaScript scanning. So when a post is updated or published, we listen for our initial PHP scan, right? So that's still there. All the other rules still run that same scan. And once that's finished, it then kicks up our JavaScript scan. And what it does, it loads the WordPress preview page in the background, renders the page. We inject a bunch of code into that page to run the evaluation. So we're not just running our own custom color contrast rule here. We've actually integrated the Axe Core library in to take
Which is open source, so people aren't familiar with that. It's an open source rule set from DQ.
So that we can take advantage of all the time and knowledge that has gone into generating that color contrast rule. And we can in some sense, Axe Core, it has kind of become a bit of a standard with, accessibility checks. So I think bringing our stuff in line with theirs, I think is a net positive for the plugin. So we actually inject the Axe Core library. We run the color contrast checks. We post the results back through the REST API, and we store those results the same as we would store our PHP scan results. So there's a lot of challenges that went into that. There's a lot of permissions and performance and memory issues that go into doing something like that. I think in the free plugin it's not as much of an issue, but in the pro plugin we have a feature where you can do a full site scan and you can scan the
Yeah,
whole
and
web.
scan everything, yeah,
Yeah,
that you've
yeah.
selected.
Yeah, so that presents a lot of challenges because with PHP if you're parsing the HTML on the page, that's a fairly quick and not resource intense process to do for most websites, right? I mean, I guess if you had like the world's longest one page website, it could take a little bit of time. But there's definitely a drawback, right? Or there's a give and take, right? So with this JavaScript scan, we went from having several false positives. I mean, and now we rerun it and there's like none or very little. Like, I mean,
Yeah, so I have a screenshot on the blog post that I published about this release that shows it's from one of our higher ed client websites, and they previously had 341,194 color contrast issues. And then on their staging site, right before we were ready for this release, we ran the beta on the staging site with their permission. And it took that down from 341,000 to 367 color contrast issues. And I looked at most of them. I did not look at them all. And they were all real.
Yeah.
They were like orange and white. So we went from having this massive amount of false positives on color contrast to the point that before we were doing this, we debated, do we just turn that rule off for them?
Yeah.
Because it's so much noise in the background. And I think, like, as you know, we're trying to build a tool that's super helpful for people. We don't want to create noise.
Yeah.
That's not helpful for people. So I don't know. I know that it took a lot of work on multiple people's parts to make this release happen. And it seemed like it made a big difference though.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was definitely like probably a 6-month undertaking from our development team. And we had some sharp developer working on it. And a lot of credit goes to him for achieving this and seeing it through. And, you know, like a proof of concept is kind of easy to work up. And we made it to a proof of concept real quick, right? Like within a couple weeks. But something like this, seeing it from proof of concept to something that's production ready, was quite the task. Because, you know, like I said, there are a lot of challenges in what we're doing and the way we're doing it. And there's, when you're rendering a full page, there's a lot of memory issues to be aware of and to look out for. So the color mm-hmm. contrast, in a way, was a little bit of a, let's test one rule, get it out there, see how it works, right? And so far,
let's talk about
so far that. It's working fairly well, right?
Because I know we've had these conversations about Axe Core.
Yeah.
And I did spend a bunch of time going through, I think I shared it with you, a spreadsheet where I was mapping our rules to Axe Core to try and figure out how many of the custom rules that you and I spent a whole bunch of time creating multiple years ago, but I think created some of these before that open source project was even really published and talked about.
Yeah.
So, but I mapped, and there's, I don't remember the number, but I feel like there's like maybe like 20-ish of our rules have an Axe rule that goes with it. Or that's like basically this checking for the same type of thing, but how they're checking might be slightly different than how we're checking. And then there's a large number of Axe rules that we don't have.
Yeah.
Some of which I'm not certain we should put in because I feel like they'll just confuse our content creators, a lot of the ARIA stuff or that stuff. So, and then we also have rules that Axe doesn't have. Another like 20 or whatever of our rules, Axe doesn't like you wrote one that warns people about carousels that specifically looks for all these different WordPress carousel skips because we're trying to create something that works well for WordPress. So Axe isn't necessarily looking for WordPress specific things like we are.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like we haven't really figured out what this timeline might be, which rules to switch. Do you think eventually we'll have all of them running on a rendered page? How do we decide that? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I mean, we've had some talk about it. You know, we got this feature out, and then kind of we pivoted to some refactor work and stuff like
some
that.
You mean you're completely building version almost like version 2.0 of this plugin?
Yeah, we're completely rewriting the whole plugin over and over again. Yeah. But
because we're working with newer WordPress coding standards, improving some things that WordPress VIP asked for.
Sure. I think,
and
yeah, not
testing
not
to, rules. Yeah.
Yeah. Not to go too far down the rabbit hole, but, you know, as a piece of software grows, right? And you bring more people in, more eyes see it, right? More people are suggesting, you know, certain things, and really the more your install count goes up, the more important, you know, unit and end-to-end testing becomes, and you know, a lot of things that happen in the background to make a software releases and launches go smooth and to allow a larger team to work on a code base, right? So that's kind of been our pivot as of late.
I have to say though, before you, I'm going to like do a little toast to our investor Yoast, because like he was really pivotal in a lot of that feedback, and someone on his team has helped you with some of the refactor.
Totally.
I do think, because you were saying bringing more people in, I feel like it's really good. And I know not everyone has the greatness of being able to have Yoast look at their code and give them feedback like we do. We're pretty lucky on that front. But I think anyone, like any plugin developer, even if you're just solo, small, like if you're able to just have anyone else, whether they're super experienced or just like at the same path in their career journey as you are, like getting feedback on your code is probably really helpful, because I know it's helped us a lot.
Yeah, it's a great practice in humility.
Oh, like taking their feedback when they're like, "No, this sucks. Rewrite it."
yeah, basically. And like you said, we're fortunate to have the consultation of somebody like Yoast, right? And Yoast is not going to sugarcoat it. He's gonna set us on the right path for success. It's going to be a wild ride, and you just got to grab the reins and go. Like, it's like, I think developers and, you know, tech leads and stuff, a lot of times we can get kind of, you know, we can put doors up, or, you know, we don't want our stuff questioned and all this. And really got to put that aside and take the constructive feedback and just channel it and use it to make the product better. Right. I think if you fight things like that, it's probably going to just hurt you more in the end. So that consultation has been great, and users of the accessibility checker plugin are going to feel that when they install the plugin and it works and it's performant and all that good stuff. So
once this refactor is done, you feel like we're going to make more rules into JavaScript rules?
Yeah, I think so. Like, so part of this feature was not just converting the color contrast over, but it was creating a framework in which we could easily convert rules to JavaScript scanning. So in our code, we actually basically just have one parameter. We change it from, you know, we just change it from PHP, you know, just a parameter that's defined as PHP or JS for JavaScript. And that converts that rule over to a JavaScript scan. Now there's a little more that involved, you know, with utilizing the correct aligning. Like Amber said, she made that spreadsheet aligning the Axe rules to our rules, and you know, Axe's rules can be like I'm not 100% sure on the terminology, but like it's like a rule and then there's checks within a rule. It might be the other way around, right? But like so aligning the right one up, and also having an architecture for us to write our own JavaScript rules alongside these Axe rules. So
yeah, I'll say that's been the biggest thing that I've been nervous about. And I mean, this, right, this is kind of like a build in public. So I'm literally going to say it. We're still doing work for clients.
Yeah.
That's how we make most of our money. We make money on the plugin, but not enough to support a whole giant team, right? And currently I'm the person who writes all the documentation. And so I know you are like, oh, it'd be easy for me to like convert all these rules. Now that I have the framework, I could just be like, use this actual. But I'm like, but wait a minute, I got to have a documentation post on our website that explains, or I even have to go back and update, which I do have a to-do. And I did do one this week. I noticed that all of our screenshots in our documentation that show examples of the errors, they don't show that you can view it on the front of the page. Because I haven't updated the screen, right? So it's like this is this weird thing I'm trying to figure out, which is how do we roll stuff out that one, we have time to do, knowing that there's one person who does it who also has to do a whole bunch of other things, right? Yeah. And also any new axe rules, I'm very cognizant of the fact that sometimes people find our plugin overwhelming as it is with the 40 plus checks we have. So like I've seen other plugins be like, we have the most checks of every plugin. I'm like, but I don't necessarily think that's the best thing. And we've even had some of those conversations with some of the like bigger people, like Stephen Walker from the VA. They have licenses of our plugin, which is super cool. But he's, you know, we've had those conversations with him about like, you know, what is this like for the average content creator? And maybe at some point, and I think we probably will, we're going to have to be like, maybe you can set on each rule and say, I want this user role to see this rule and this other user role won't see it. And it just won't even show up in their report. Like it'll be hidden. Like, I don't know. So like, I'm nervous about suddenly just being like, oh, the axe rules.
Yeah. It'd be a lot. It'd be a lot.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a challenge. The I think from a technical standpoint, I think that the work that we've put into, you know, the performance and memory allocation for such a render inside of WordPress, I think we're taking the hit, right? We're taking the performance hit. The evaluations aren't much of a hit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're rolling up, we're rendering the page, and then I think to run all of our rules as JavaScript rules are not really going to affect the performance all that much. And then that would allow us to remove the PHP checks altogether. So we're just running everything through what we call JavaScript scanning. Yeah. So
I won't do the thing developers love where I'm like, how much time will that take you? Give me a deadline.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll take. Take a lot of time, but but I mean,
I'm curious.
Yeah,
this is not in our notes, but so I'm you know, I love to surprise Steve.
Yeah, thanks.
So I have seen this is one challenge. You're right. You release it. I mean, we did a lot of testing. We did a lot of testing in different environments and those sorts of things. But it gets released, and then you know, you hear back from all the people that have random plugins or random themes or things that it just like realistically we couldn't possibly test with all these things.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've noticed, particularly in the more in the pro version when it's doing a full site scan, is that when we render the page, if that page has a ton of like JavaScript, like console errors already, like not from our thing, like some other plugin or their theme or something is like breaking a bunch on the front end, that sometimes it can make it harder for Accessibility Checker to render that page. And I don't know, like, is there anything we can do about that? Or do we almost need to like have a warning that's like on that is like, notifies people when we've rendered your page, we noticed all these errors. You might want to investigate.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
well,
I mean,
I think that's all part of, that's all part of WordPress and WordPress plugin development, right? Moving over to utilizing the REST API to move this data back and forth and to utilizing JavaScript, the Axe Core JavaScript library to evaluate these scans, right? I mean, we were using Ajax before, so this kind of still mattered before, right? But like if there's things that are there are console errors that are, and there's other errors from other plugins or from your theme that are causing errors, that's definitely going to a high potential that could block it from working at all.
So that's like that pass, the biggest thing that we still get, right?
Authentication.
Is the notice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it can't, sometimes it can't scan at all. And there's been weird things like someone has their SSL certificate misconfigured.
Yeah. Or they don't have the
correct
PHP
libraries. And so then the plugin will flag that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, that is a huge challenge of doing what we're doing inside of WordPress. The unknown. The unknown of what server environment we're running in, right? And what their PHP setup is, what PHP extensions are installed, even what version of WordPress they're running, right? It's the Accessibility Checker supports the last three major versions, right? But even in that, there, you know, there can sometimes people are running four or five versions back, right? And we still, like, if the support comes in, we're still trying to do our best to help with that. I don't know that we've ever hit it where we're like, no, we don't support that, right? Like, we've never been that strict, but
no, we've tried so, really hard to try and make things work for people.
So to that, if you have console errors, right, and if they're specifically these errors are blocking, Ajax, or they're blocking the REST API from working, obviously this is not going to work, right? The plugin's not going to work. And obviously any other plugin that requires the REST API or Ajax is going to have a problem too. Where it gets a little weird is that if you got a lot of warnings on the page, you know, or you got some errors on the page that aren't actually breaking errors, right? They're not going to,
Do you mean like console errors and warnings?
Yeah,
it's not like accessibility
console
checker.
Errors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So
console. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. So if we're going through and we're rendering the page, right? So there can be a buildup, right? There can be a memory buildup from all of those errors because they're being regenerated over and over and over and over again.
Every time you render a page in the full site scan, you render a page, scan it, save information. Render a new. Well, I think there's like a pause, right? I think
I
remember you all built a pause in, and we had a conversation. Did this get released that we might have a filter where people can change the pause?
It's not released. It's we have.
Oh,
a,
okay. So that is coming though, because
yeah,
we
yeah.
figured out on very low resource servers, people might need to make that pause longer.
So
but it pauses, then it renders the page and does it all over again in like a loop.
Yeah,
but that won't clear out the console errors.
Yeah,
so
there's polling that's going on, and I believe the default is 3 seconds that we're polling, right? Yeah, so we're polling a page. We actually check, you know, there's a lot. I mean, it's pretty advanced. Like, we're checking that it's complete. The last page is complete before the, and then when the polling runs, it'll grab a new page if it's ready to go.
Because we don't want to overload someone's server. That's the idea behind that.
Yeah, and that's the key thing. And where the PHP rules will run a lot faster because we're not rendering a page and we're doing one git file to grab all the HTML. And once we have the HTML, right, we can just jam that through all the rules. Sorry, I hit my mic. We can jam that through all the rules. We don't have to grab it every time. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to parse the HTML every time. With the JavaScript, we got to roll the page up every time so that we can see what it looks like and evaluate it. So what happens in a browser environment is if you have a lot of errors or warnings or deprecation warnings in your console, they can kind of build up over time. And like, they can build up in your browser memory over time. So we've had to do a lot to be mindful of that, like in our polling timing. And in Chromium browsers, we can actually get access to how much memory utilization there is. And if that gets too high, then we can enact a page
refresh. You force
refresh.
A refresh.
Yeah. So these are big challenges, and they require some out of the box thinking and solutions. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that you all were able to come up with the out of the box thinking for that. Cause I, you know, as someone who's not on the code side, right, but is on the idea side, it's so easy to be like, just do this thing.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that you're able to make it work. Cause I really do feel like as much as we can, having some baseline of the plugin that does not require a SaaS connection is really important. But I do feel like there's going to be a time when we're going to have to revisit that SaaS, especially as we see these larger government, university, super enterprise businesses start to use the plugin. We probably will, I think, end up needing to do some sort of offsite scanning and maybe even storage of data. So
probably.
That it's not in the WordPress database.
Yeah, probably in the pro version of our plugin. That's probably where it'll eventually mature to.
Yeah, or maybe like I see it potentially. I don't know. I don't want anyone who's listening that has pro to think, oh man, in the future, I'm going to be forced to pay for every scan because I don't, that's not the intention at all. And I don't think that's what we're trying to get at. I think more the way I see it, and you can tell me if you see differently, I would love there to be, I mean, there might end up being some sort of limit, like we can only store a million records or whatever that might be, right? Some number. And then you could either in pro, like go up to that limit and at that point be like, okay, well, I've hit my limit, but fine. I have however many accessibility problems on these many pages that I can fix, and then I can scan the rest or something. Mm-hmm. Or you could then just say, I want to toggle on the API, like do it optionally, right? That's kind of what I'm hoping, that there'll be some option. So there is still something for those people that are like, I really can only pay what, $144 a year. It's slightly more than $10 a month, right? Yeah. Like that's all my budget is. Cause I get worried about when we limit it, you know, like those SASs are cool.
Yeah.
But a lot of them start at like $10,000, $25,000. I've seen university contracts where they're paying like $100,000 a year for the software, and small businesses aren't going to do that. They're not.
Yeah. And when you talk about moving the needle when it comes to accessibility, like mm-hmm. I really think that the individual user has a huge responsibility in that. And like that, if we can make accessibility easy and presentable to them in right there when they're making their pages, that's going to go miles for accessibility as a whole, especially in a platform like WordPress. That's half the internet, you know, it's crazy. And like you said, access to accessibility tools is important for everybody, you know,
mm-hmm. not just people with big budgets.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we only have a few minutes left, but I'm curious, can we tease anything that might be coming in Accessibility Checker, or anything we've been talking about?
I mean, that's really putting me on the spot because we are heavily.
Isn't that my job?
Well, yeah, we are heavily in, you know, a lot of refactor and stuff for, you know, better performance and security and all kinds of things like that. All the good software development stuff. We've been there for a few months now, right? And
yeah, probably have a few more left.
So Amber's itching to get back to the roadmap and get some features pushed through.
Yeah, so some of them are waiting on me, I will totally admit.
I think we've
talked about redoing our setting screens and
onboarding wizard and setting mm-hmm. screen. And
so I need to do some wireframing for you.
Yeah. We would like to bring some fixes into Accessibility Checker. We would like to help mm-hmm. Not just evaluate your code. We would like to help you fix things in an automated way.
Yep. Where we can do it the right way.
Where we can do it the right way. Yeah. 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 So
yep.
That's kind of.
So we'll see.
Yeah. So we'll get back to that roadmap and make Amber real happy with some nice, shiny new features coming to you soon.
Yeah. You know, I love to say for everyone who's listening, what I love to be is like, I pick a date and I'm like, hey, we're sponsoring WordCamp EU, which we are, by the way. If you're listening, you're going to be there. We will be there. Come say hi to us.
Yeah.
Is that's your first international trip, Steve?
Yeah, believe it or not, I haven't really ventured too far out of the United States before. So
yeah, Chris also has never been to Europe. I have been to a tiny part of Italy just over the border from France when I was in college and I was studying in France, and I rode the train to Italy to get lunch one day.
There you go.
So we will be there. But what I sometimes do is I'm all like, can we add this feature before WordCamp EU?
Yeah.
WordCamp US? Like that's the timeline. Cause I'm like, wouldn't it be cool to be there and be like, look at this new fancy thing our plugin can do.
Yeah. She likes to kill us before we go on a big trip where we gotta speak and all kinds of stuff. And quite frankly, we got to launch the feature while we're there, right? Like, which is always
lovely. Or it'll be released. I know that was WordCamp US that got released. Like, we were there before the event, and you released it. And I know that we were all a little bit nervous because we're like,
Yeah.
What happens if a lot of support comes in? But luckily, not all of our dev team was there. So we had our support devs. We're still.
So we had somebody back at home making bug fixes while we're.
Yeah. Hopefully there's not too many bugs because we got a pretty solid process for testing and all that now.
Totally.
So, yeah. Well, this has been fun. I do miss Chris. I'm not totally sure. I might have to go have him try this and give me his verdict on the mango michelada.
I can't even pick it up. It's so heavy.
They are big cans. It's fruit juice though. Maybe it has vitamins in it.
Maybe.
So are you on the you would never buy it again camp?
Oh yeah, I didn't like it. I didn't like it. or what's what would I normally say? That's gross. Yeah.
Oh, that's a t-shirt I got at a shop. That's nasty.
That's nasty. That's what it was.
That's what you
nasty.
Say.
Yeah. I mean, it's not nasty, but it doesn't taste like beer at all. It's just like I feel like I'm drinking like a V8 with some chili powder in it or something.
And fizz.
Fizz, yeah, a little
carbonation.
Bit of,
yeah.
You know, we didn't.
Yeah, it doesn't
that.
Really have a beer flavor.
Yeah.
But I think I like the fresh made ones better. But I'd be interested to try the non-mango. Like it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Cool.
All right.
All right.
Well, thanks for hanging out. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
All right. See you guys.
Thanks for listening to Accessibility Craft. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe in your podcast app to get notified when future episodes release. You can find Accessibility Craft on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And if building accessibility awareness is important to you, please consider rating Accessibility Craft 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Accessibility Craft is produced by Equalize Digital and hosted by Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and Steve Jones. Steve Jones composed our theme music. Learn how we help make thousands of WordPress websites more accessible at equalizedigital.com.